Okay, here we are. Thank you for all being here. Here's my talk right here. This is the sixth version of it. It's called A Beautiful Mind. You ever see that movie? Well, I wanted to start off with a quote that says, "Thinking is easy, acting is difficult, and to put one's thoughts into action is the most difficult thing in the world." And the topic that I chose is, "I have decided to be my God self." I'm going to put this down here so I can look at my lovely friends over here. And that's a song that we sing here a lot. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit what that means to me, "I have decided to be my God self." Now, I looked up the word "decided" because, you know, a lot of times we take things for granted and, you know, you kind of know it. But the actual definition of "decided" means free from doubt or wavering. How many of you like to be free from doubt or wavering? I'm sorry, but I should see everybody's hands up there. No, I would rather be in doubt and wavering all the time. But how many times does that happen in our lives? What are the things that we do that keep us in doubt and wavering? For me, it's about saying things like, "Well, we'll see what happens. I'm thinking about, maybe I'll," those kind of words and that kind of language is not an affirmative way of being in the world. So what I wanted to talk to you today about is a couple of decisions that have meant a lot to me in my life. For those of you who don't know, this is my first talk ever in a public speaking arena. And I was trying to find a guest speaker for this Sunday, and I couldn't find one. Actually, my friend Eric was going to do it, but he was supposed to be speaking somewhere else. So now you could come up. No. Although I will have Eric here, and I think in September we're going to book a date if we don't have our new senior minister yet. So I appreciate you being here and giving me the support. So I thought, well, you know, I've done just about everything else here. I've the business director, music director, choir director. I've served food. I've cleaned toilets. I've chief bottle washer. Just about everything. When you work in a church, you do everything. And I used to say, I do everything here but preach. So today I just thought, well, maybe I'll take that on. And I tell you, out of all the jobs that I've done here at the church, this one has been the most stressful. Up until last night. Because thinking about what I wanted to say and, you know, we had Mary Morrissey here last week. You know, that's a hard act to follow. I mean, come on. The gal's been at it 30 years, you know, so I appreciate you all being here. I was kind of hoping there'd be five, but it's really nice to see all of you. So the first decision I want to tell you about is how I got into New Thought. I came into New Thought probably in the early 80s. And I stumbled into it kind of in a back doorway. My upbringing was not a religious upbringing. We used to go to church, and they taught us at church that you weren't supposed to smoke, drink, cuss, dance. It was a Nazarene church, not to be anything against Nazarene, but they were pretty strict. And our household was not that way. I mean, we didn't drink, and we did smoke, and we did cuss a lot. So I thought, you know, this is a little different. You know, on Sunday you're supposed to be this way, and then it, you know, it just didn't work for me. And so, but at one point, I was looking for something outside of myself, some kind of spiritual connection. And, you know, at the ripe age of 14, I thought, my life is pretty together. You know, I've got a boyfriend, I've got good grades, and everybody likes me. Maybe I should find God. That sounded like a good thing. I mean, you know, don't most 14-year-olds do that? I don't think so. So I set out on this journey to find God, and I found someone who told me about Jesus in a different way than I had heard in the Nazarene church. I started hearing about Jesus as a personal connection and I could have this personal relationship, and that I just needed to accept Jesus into my heart and ask Jesus to forgive me of my sins and all these sorts of things. And so I said, well, that kind of makes sense, because it hit me in a heart place. And I had only been thinking of God in my head. And so I went into this Christian way of life, and much to the chagrin of my parents, because I was preaching, you know, I had to tell everybody how they needed to get to Jesus. And, you know, nobody likes to hear a 15-year-old telling, you know, their parents that they're sinful and that they should be, you know, going to church and doing these things. And I mean, I wasn't just your regular Youth for Christ kind of a kid, you know, going around handing out pamphlets. I mean, I was in born again, charismatic, speaking in tongues, healing the sick, casting out demons, all those sort of things. That was, we didn't call it fundamental Christians at the time. We were just Jesus freaks. That's what we called ourselves, because we loved Jesus. We were high on the love of the Lord. And it was the early 70s, and we just wanted to feel the love of God and that sort of thing. But there was just some conflict in me, because, you know, I would talk to the minister's wife, and she had this little tiny baby. She had just had this baby. And she was telling me how sinful the baby was. You know, that the baby was going to grow up and be, you know, was born in sin. And I was like, I mean, I was 16. I thought, that doesn't make any sense to me. You're telling me, and I said to her, you're telling me that this little baby here is sinful? Oh, yes. She will be in sin as she grows up and needs to. And I thought, this is just bizarre. But I kept on. But during that time, I also was the kind of Christian that was thirsty. In the sense of the grape. You know what I'm saying? We figured Jesus had turned the water into wine. Why not drink it? I mean, it make perfect sense. And so you have to get it that I'm this Christian, Jesus person, drinking, having conflict, and going, wow, life is really odd. So I wound up at around 21, throwing aside the whole Jesus side of myself and the Christian side, because there was conflicts within myself of who I am as a person in the world, and the Christian philosophy did not accept me. It did not accept my lifestyle choices that I decided to make. And so with that in mind, and having people tell me that I was probably going to be killed by God, nice, loving friends, that I did what any good person would do at that age. I went and drank. I drank a lot, because having this experience of knowing something about spirituality or something about God, and then people telling me how horrible I am, it was just, I couldn't hold the two thoughts. I'm a Gemini. I should have been able to, but I couldn't do it. So what I did was I chose an easier way for me, and that was to really indulge in drugs and alcohol. And at the ripe old age of 25, I discovered that I could no longer do that. And through a series of circumstances, I had to put that down, and I wound up in a recovery center and learned about what sobriety is and how to live a sober life as a woman, and that I could do anything that I wanted to in the world, but I just couldn't drink or use. And one of the things that the recovery program taught me is to look into spirituality, into prayer and meditation. Now, I had come from this place of being a Christian, and I thought Jesus was outside of me, or God was outside of me, and so I kept looking out from myself for answers and for spirituality. And in this particular road that I chose of in this recovery, it started telling me to go within and look for God within myself. And one of the tools that I used at that time, I forgot to bring it up, was our little pamphlet, The Daily Word. Somebody had given it to me. Just, I don't even know how I got it, but I started reading that on a daily basis along with some other literature. And I thought, wow, that's kind of cool. You know, I had a really kind of a stinky attitude, and this book was really positive, and, you know, quite honestly, it was a little Pollyanna to me, but it was a lot better than my sarcastic mind, and I needed to come down from and get some positive thoughts in my mind. And so I was reading the Daily Word and going along in my life, and things were doing better. I was walking down the street in Santa Monica one day, and I saw in the window of this bookstore the Daily Word. And I thought, well, that's kind of odd. What's that doing there? It's my little book. It's a private thing. What is it doing there out in the public? And I looked, and it said Unity Bookstore, Unity by the Sea Bookstore. And so I walked in, and I went. There was a nice lady there, kind of like our St. Pat, in the bookstore, and she started telling me all about the books and the church there. And when she said church, I was like, whoa, wait a minute. I know all about church. No. I said, well, what is this church about? She goes, oh, it's just really, you know, positive and everything's great. You could come right in. And she opened the door and there was this beautiful sanctuary. I was like, oh, my God. There was a part of me that was terrified because I didn't want to have the same experience that I had before. But there was a part of me that was pulling me forward to say, check it out. Don't give up or don't just cast it aside because of my past experience. So I went to church that Sunday. And I met with one of the ministers, and I went in and had this conference with her, and I said, so, my name is Beverly, I'm a recovering alcoholic, I'm this, I'm that, and that. Do you guys accept me here? You know, I was a real pretty girl. And she says, you know, you're completely welcomed here, we accept everyone, and, you know, we would love to have you here. I would just invite you to think about what you're saying. You're saying, I am this, and I am that, and I am this. And she said, maybe one day you can just be Beverly. And I thought, wow. What do you mean? I have to have these labels. I have to have these definitions of who I am. And she just invited me to think about it, and it really kind of stirred me inside. But, you know, over the years, that has really come to be, which is really a blessing. So that was my major decision in my life, was to pick up the tools of recovery and start walking on this new path of spirituality. So I got into New Thought through the back door of recovery, and I started to go to church, and I started going to classes to learn about meditation, all kinds of things. You know, you can do anything in your life and just try things and put it on and see how it fits. I wound up here in Seattle back in 93, and I had been living in a place where there wasn't a New Thought community. And so when I got to Seattle, I heard about this church, and I literally ran here the first Sunday because I was like, I need church. I need some church. And Reverend Linda was here. And the place was just really filled with love, and I felt at home. And I've been here ever since, one way or another. I was the music director for Linda for many years, and she fired me one year. That was really fun, and I've been hired here. It's just, you know, this has been my home. So the second decision I want to tell you about is you can spend a lot of time up here and nothing seems to go, the time doesn't seem to go by. Yeah, how about another song? No. So the second thing I wanted to tell you is about how I got into this particular position that I'm in right now here at Unity of Bellevue. I was working for a corporation for 10 years, a coffee corporation in town, and, you know, I just knew I wanted to be doing more in music. I wanted to be exploring my spirituality more. It's just, you know, coffee, making coffee and selling coffee just didn't seem to make it, you know. It seemed like a disconnect. And so I had been doing a lot of work on intentions. Intentions are a really great tool for making decisions and moving ahead in your life. And so I had an intention probably 7 years ago. I said, I want to be out of my job by the end of this year. That was my intention. And at the end of the year, I was out of that job. And I wasn't in this job. I was given another job that was completely different. It felt like it wasn't in choice, but it was. And it was something I was not qualified to do, I didn't have any interest in, and I just felt like I was going to poke my eye out with a fork. That's the way I felt. But they wanted to pay me a lot of money, so I thought, okay, let's not just, you know, cut and run. Let's take a look here. My intention had come true. I was out of the current job that I had, and I was into another job. So what I learned from that was I needed to be specific. And so on New Year's Eve, and you were there at Kathy Ann's house, we stated some intentions at the first of the year. And I said, I want to be out of my job into a new job that has to do with music, with church, and that I get paid a good salary. And within, I think, 3 weeks, I was talking to Jan on the phone, and Jan was our board president at the time, and we were setting up time for Garnet and myself to come sing here. And she said, oh, well, we've created this position. They were creating this position called business manager at the church. And I thought, wow, I wonder if I could do that. So I asked a couple questions, and she said, well, you know, it's this and that. And I thought, well, you know, I could do that. I could do that. So I asked her, I said, well, you know, what are you guys going to pay? And she told me, and I kind of laughed and choked. And I thought, okay, I'm not going to close the door on this. I'm just going to investigate. I'm going to investigate. And so I decided not to shut the door and that to walk in and to do the footwork, as I like to say. And if it's for me to do, I will do it. And so I didn't really have any kind of fear or anxiety over it. I presented myself in a professional way. And I remember coming here to my interview with the minister and several board members, and I don't think any of you are here, probably in the second service. And I remember standing outside there, the window there, right actually where Martha is standing, looking into the sanctuary, and there was a memorial service going on for a woman that I didn't know, but she was my age, and she had passed, and I just sat there and I got it. I got it, that I did not want to continue in my life doing something that I didn't love to do. And I wanted to have the experience of doing something that I loved to do and where I felt I was in the right place at the right time and loving my life. And that I wanted to do that before I died. You know, that was a big impact on me. And so we walked into the minister's office for this interview, and the first thing Jan said, well, why do you want this job? And I was like, well, waterworks. Because I was in that moment. And for those of you who don't know me, I'm not a big waterworks person, especially in front of people. And so that was a huge decision for me to take this job. And I've been grateful ever since. I've learned so much. From being here, I've learned so much with music, with Rob. He's mentored me along with the choir and with Reverend John. It's just been a big growth spurt for me. One of the things that I notice when I do make decisions is that my paradigm changes. My thinking and my view, my point of view of life gets higher. I start to see a larger picture, and it opens up a way for me. Now, when I first got into recovery, I thought my life was over at 25. I didn't have anything to look forward to. My paradigm was this big. It's all I knew, and I thought it was always going to be that way. And as I opened up and changed and made decisions to change my life, my world got bigger and bigger and bigger, and my heart got fuller. And so one of the things that's really important for me when I make decisions is that my view of life changes, and then I get a new opportunity to grow, and then that one kind of needs to expand, so another decision, another change comes. So the third thing that I wanted to discuss with you is where I'm making decisions today in my life. Now, with Reverend John leaving a couple months ago, I guess now, he opened a space here at the church for us, and we're open and excited and waiting for our next minister to come. And we know that we're in a good shape. We're in a good place for that. And the one thing that Reverend John always said to me when I first got here, or when he first came, is he said, well, what do you want to do? Well, you know, if you could do anything, what would you want to do? And I'd go, I don't know. What do you mean? What do I want to do? What do you want me to do? Because I was used to working for people who would give an outline. Here's what we're doing. Now you fill in, you know, and I could be creative and I could, you know, take and do things that interest me. But I had a boundary. I knew where I fit in. But John would say, what do you want to do? And my, you know, I would go, I don't know. And so he kept saying that over year after year after year. And finally, when he left, I went, well, I don't know. What do I want to do? What do I want to do? And as I started to think about my career in Unity, I started thinking maybe I need to think in a higher, a larger way. And I went down to the ministers' conference in June to kind of scout out some ministers, and it was really, really fun. It was very enlightening. I got to meet some really wonderful ministers from Nigeria. Unity is all over the world. It's really exciting, and there's some really exciting things that are going on in the organization. And I met a man who is a minister in Hawaii, Reverend Sky St. John, and he talked about a program that he has in Honolulu. And it is a licensed Unity teacher program where you go and you're an intern for a certain amount of time, and then you're able to go out and become a licensed Unity teacher, and then you can go into the field ministry. And so he said, you should do it. You're really good. And I thought, you don't even know me. How would you know that? And then I ran into Ricky Byers when they were leaving from the conference, and she knows me as Rev Bev. And I mean, how many of you guys know me as Rev Bev? It's my alter ego. She goes, oh, Rev Bev, how are you? And I go, oh, great. You know, and so she goes, oh, your minister, he's so funny, because she met John. And I said, well, he's left and he's moved on to L.A. And she goes, oh, well, are you going to do it? And I went, I'm not going to do it. I'm not a minister. She goes, yes, you are. You're Rev Bev. I said, no, I don't have the paper. She goes, oh, don't worry about that. I'm like, oh, okay. So I started thinking about it, and I thought, well, yeah, why don't I open myself up to this idea? And so I don't have a timeline, but I am entering into the ministerial field. I don't know how it's going to end up, but I've made the decision to move forward. And as I'm moving forward, I feel behind me, things are closing behind me. And one of those things will probably be here at Unity of Bellevue, but not anytime soon. I promised Ina. I told her, and I thought, oh, I got to tell her, not soon. So there's a process here, and there's a time. And so this is a time of transition for me. I know that I want to develop my spiritual side more. I need to study. I need to do work in that. You know, when I work here, I'm busy doing the business and I'm busy doing the music, and that takes a lot of mind space, or like they used to say in my old company, bandwidth. Whoever liked that word? I mean, it was like, I remember the guy said, do you have the bandwidth to do this? And I'm like, does that mean energy? Yes, I do. Strange words, corporations. So I'm going to be starting to move in a different way. And when we have our new minister here, hopefully they will help support in my transition of that. And so I'm really excited about it. I love the idea of it. And one of the things is when I make a decision, there's no more doubt and there's no more wavering. But sometimes there's little things that go, are you sure? Are you sure, Blanche? And the thing is, when I make a decision, I don't have to be locked into the form of it where it has to be this particular way. I think making the decision opens up the space for the Spirit to provide. So I think I've touched on all of my points here. Wow. That's pretty good. So what does it mean for me to step into my God self? It means to be in integrity. It means to be honest. It means to be kind. It means to be loving. It means to be open and open to the experience. So I would invite you, if you have decisions to make, to think about it. No, don't think about it. Make a decision to be free from doubt or from wavering. I wanted to leave you with this quote that some people think is by, is it Goethe? Goethe, is that how you say it? Goethe. I had to look it up. But actually, it's a combination from Goethe and William Hutchinson Murray is what I found. And I'd invite Rob to come up, and we're going to close this service up here. But I really like it. Whoever wrote it and whoever put it together and edited it, it's a great thing to leave you with. Until one is committed, there is hesitancy, the chance to draw back, always ineffectiveness. Concerning all acts of initiative and creation, there is one elementary truth, the ignorance of which kills countless ideas and splendid plans, that the moment one definitely commits oneself, then providence moves in too. All sorts of things occur to help one that would never otherwise have occurred. A whole stream of events issue from the decision, raising in one's favor all manner of unforeseen incidents, meetings, and material assistance which no man could have dreamed would have come his way. Whatever you can do or dream you can, begin it. Boldness has genius, power, and magic in it. Begin it now. And so it is.